the OTB Podcast Network.
Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what do we get, a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The Saturday panel on Off The Ball.
Hi, welcome back to Off The Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through till 5 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off The Ball. It's Brighton 1, Manchester United 1 in the Premier League at halftime at the Amex. This is the panel. We're streaming live as well. You can watch us on the Off The Ball social channels for Periscope and Off The Ball for Twitter, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store to download it. So last Sunday, that was pretty cool to be an Irish sports fan, watching Sam Bennett sprint up the Champs-Élysées to win the stage at the Tour de France, and with that, the green jersey. And why didn't we think about it when we thought about the production meeting? Why don't we talk about cycling this week? So we're going to talk about cycling over the next hour on the Saturday panel. And three great guests to discuss a few things, like, can Sam Bennett's achievements make a difference for the sport in this country? How is the sport coping during COVID-19? And what are its future prospects? So we're delighted to be joined by the former Olympian and gold medal winner in the scratch race of the World Championships, Martin Irvine, the Cycling Ireland Performance Director, Brian Nugent, and the Paralympic gold medalist as the pilot to Katie George Dunleavy in Rio, Eve McChrystal. So, Martin, Brian and Eve, how are we all today?
All good.
All good, yeah.
Hope you're all good. Brian, I believe you're in Italy at the moment. Tell us why.
Yeah, we're in Imola here for the World Championships, for the road race starts tomorrow with the time trial yesterday. So we have Nicholas Roach with us here, Ryan Mullen, and Ben Healy. And so Nicholas just come down from Paris last week to join the team. So we're 200 odd kilometres tomorrow. So we've been out on the course today, and we're getting ready for that.
Is it going to plan for you for the moment?
A good race tomorrow. Well, yesterday didn't go as we had planned. With Ryan, the time trial is his target event, and in the past he's been top five in the World Senior Championships. Yesterday he was 25th, and it's usually like in the standard we have nowadays, and the guys coming in from the tour, like one small mistake or two, and you're 25th instead of coming fifth. So like, it wasn't a disaster, but it wasn't really what we were hoping for. So we're just going to refocus and build for tomorrow.
And Martin, I believe you're doing some coaching now with Brian at the high performance unit.
Yeah, Brian's my boss, funny enough.
Oh, it's okay. Not at the moment, not for the next hour, Martin.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I've been through the whole system, the track side of things, and I've learned kind of I've learned the hard way, let's say that. So it's good to come back and try and kind of help the next generation through, or just trying to, just share what I learned. Hopefully people don't do the same things I did wrong, you know. Hopefully we get the good side of it.
You find it enjoyable?
Good question. I suppose I should say yes, but it's definitely different. There's a whole other bundle of stress from, you know, when you're a bike rider, you just like, you have this tunnel vision and you just think about yourself most of the time. So there was definitely a shift in my brain from thinking about having to think about other people. So there's definitely, it is good fun. It's still, you're still traveling a lot and getting to a lot of races, but you know, and you don't have to do the physical toil of it. So but it's good to be in the bubble and try and, yeah, it's definitely, I will say yes, it's enjoyable, yeah.
And for those of us who are watching at the moment on our social streams, we can see behind you there, Martin, that jersey from the Worlds, is it on the medal in a frame behind you?
That's it, yeah. It's two medals and a Worlds jersey. That's my silver and gold hanging up there. That's about the only thing I bothered framing, so.
That's mightily impressive, that jersey, isn't it? Absolutely fantastic jersey.
It was a career defining moment in my life. So I'd say without that up there, or having earned that, you wouldn't be talking to me now. So it carries that much weight, you know, so it's good.
Eve, I believe you've already been on the road this morning.
Yes, I had a time trial up north this morning. So yeah, it was a bit of a rush to get back, but I'm here. So yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it this morning. Windy, but enjoyable.
How did that go for you?
It was good. I have no idea where or anything. I just got in the car and come home. So I'll have to you know, get on the bike later on to free the legs up, because after a time trial, getting into the car isn't the best thing to do, but here we are.
How have you been coping, Eve, with the whole training? I'm sure Tokyo is still in the back of your mind with COVID and everything the last few months.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've said before, COVID was very good for myself and Katie. Not taken away from the horrible situation everybody was in, but for us as athletes, it definitely was a positive, and we've taken positives from it. Kind of glad now Tokyo is a year ahead, or another year, because I think we've learned an awful lot through COVID. I had Katie in the house with me for 4 months, so she'll definitely be coming back, and I won't let her go home.
Absolutely, yeah. It's been a great week, folks. Obviously, cycling is now in the limelight of everybody, not from only the people who love it and who are on bikes and who are part of the sport every day in this country, but also for the casual sports fan to see Sam Bennett win the green jersey of the Tour de France, first time in 31 years, won the stage on the Champs-Élysées last Sunday. It was quite emotional stuff to see him. I know myself, I grew up watching cycling, watching Roach and Kelly and early in Kimmage at the Tour de France, and I've been fascinated by it as a young lad. Then I kind of fell out of love with it. How could you not after the Lance Armstrong affair? But I kind of felt that childish enthusiasm for it, like watching Sam Bennett last Sunday. Brian, you've known him a long time. You've known him since he was 16.
Yeah, look, I happened to be the junior coach at the time when Sam was a junior. So I was running the road and track program back then, and Sam turned up like all the other young kids, enthusiastic, looking a pathway through to becoming a pro, riding the Tour de France and things like that. And like I first came across him, like he was always fast, and you could see that. But he was always enthusiastic and wanted to do it. And he had a good group of young kids around him. And we used to go off to Belgium. We used to do track training out there, ride kermesses, and take them off in the summer to get them into that kind of scene. Then he actually won the European Track Championships as a junior that year. And then he had 2 years in that program with us, and then he moved in with the Am Post Irish team then. But Kurt Bogard was a mentor for him. So and then we sort of came back in contact again in 2012 when I became the head coach again, and Sam was on one of my first teams for the World Championships in Florence. So at that stage he'd come back around and been a pro. So like we've had a lot of run-ins, and you know, we keep every year, in the last number of years now, he's been on the Irish team for the World Championships and the Europeans. He was fifth last year for us in Holland. So Sam has had a good pathway through there, and I was really just to see him work so hard for 12-13 years. It's good to see him actually. It's actually hard to believe as well, and even though you know him so well, it's hard to believe that he won the green jersey on the stage when it's John Zalesi. Like everybody, we were all just so happy, all our coaches and people, because you know you were there along the way, and you can see it, and you can sort of. You can feel some pride and joy there, so it's just great to see that happen for us, you know.
Yeah, Brian, would I be right in saying you the track program a little bit of kudos for helping Sam in those early days?
We did our best. No, but for Sam, like Sam enjoyed road track, everything, you know, and he did a little bit of team pursuit, but then he went off onto the road and into France and up to Belgium, and he had a real good. He just liked racing and he loved going fast, and the see him win it was fantastic, you know. Martin, you were with him on the team at that time.
Yeah, I think from my end, what people see the Champs-Élysées win and think it's brilliant and all, but Sam is robust as hell. You know, you see he had a lot of downtime. There was probably points in his career where he could have just said screw it and went off another direction. So it's actually really good to see someone work through the program and just tough it out through the ups and downs and getting that success, because it wasn't easy by any means. It was cool to see.
Yeah, there was plenty of points there. There were plenty of points where he could have gone left or right, but he was very persistent and stayed at it. There was times when he was ill, injured, couldn't get spots on a team. But look, that's the same for most careers, but in sport, because sport's up and down. But he did stay at it, Martin. You were in and out of it as well, and some teams with him.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's great to see it pay off for once, because I'm sure we've lost a lot of athletes through the cracks that have just didn't stop. You know, obviously Sam has something in him to make him persist through the whole rough time. So. Yeah, I think that's what made it even more emotional for him, you know, because it was definitely long awaited.
Eve,
one of the things.
Go on, Brian.
See, one of the things that stands out is what makes the sport tough for these young guys is you're back and forward to the UK when you're used to use the velodrome over there, and then you're back and forward to Belgium like it needs to use your own kids, 16, 17, 18, to do the races there, because you have to really be based abroad. And you know, it takes a tough cookie to make it, you know, at the very end. So look, he worked hard for it. He deserved that win.
And Eva, he was really in control of the whole tour. He got that green jersey quite early. He won that stage earlier on, and to hold Peter Sagan at bay, that's pretty darn impressive.
Eve, do you want to grab that one?
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear. Sorry, say that
sorry,
again.
Sorry, Eve. It's just a connection, no problem. Just Sam Bennett, he was in control throughout the tour. You know, there's always the worry with the mountains and that, but he possessed that green jersey at an early stage, and he was able to see it through.
Oh, don't ask me a question about a sprint. That'll have to go to the boys for sure. I think they'll take that. I wouldn't even dream of speaking about how Sam got to that finish line. It wouldn't be what I would do as an athlete. So I'll let one of the boys answer that, I think.
No, but just
even you watching it though, surely it was awesome to see you just an Irish jersey up there competing.
Oh, and every interview I watched after, I cried. Like, it was so emotional, even. Like, as an athlete, even though, as I said, I'm not a sprinter, and even getting into that position and coming off somebody's wheel and being aware of who's beside you and slotting in and all of that to get to the finish line as an athlete goes, what must go through your brain. And for me sitting at home, like, the neighbours just, I was absolutely screaming, because you can just feel the emotion, you know exactly how he feels. And like, all of the races you do throughout your life, there's just a handful nearly of good ones, and there's more bad ones. So even just for it to all pay off, as like for me sitting at home, like anybody else watching it, it was just amazing. And even the motivation it gives you as an athlete is massive as an Irish athlete. You just nearly feel invincible, or I want to go out on my bike tomorrow and sprint. You know, I don't sprint, but you feel that you just, is something that you just want to do. And like, my kids watched it, and it was just amazing, I think, for the country, what he has done. It really is.
And we saw with his grandfather as well, like watching TV, that was quite a heartfelt moment, watching his grandson win that stage. How can cycling then capitalise on this? How can cycling capitalise on the fact that it is in the limelight at the moment with Sam Bennett? It'll be helpful to get a velodrome in Ireland, obviously. Brian, you've been in Mallorca and Spain for the last while with the velodrome. Are we going to get a velodrome into Dublin?
If we don't get it now, we'll never get it. You know, we're at that stage. There's been really good projects and ideas for a number of years, and there's always good intentions, and then something happens that it doesn't come to fruition. But at the moment, we've been promised by the government and Sport Ireland, and they're very genuine and that they want to do this. COVID, yes, it may put things back a small bit, who knows, but the intent is there. People can see now what can happen if you have this type of thing in our country. We had to travel always to do that. As I say, myself and Martin, we share an apartment in Mallorca half the year, coaching the next group coming through. Martin lived there several years before he became a world champion. And then you have to go away to do that sort of thing. But if you had that at home, you have so many more people to get through the door. You have so many people, like, forget about high performance, even just your kids coming up there during the school breaks to try it out. It's a real great sport. It's safe, and it's indoors, and it's you know, it's healthy. But the main thing is, for the performance end of things, is that you'll get such a volume of talent through there that when you go to the World Championships and the Olympics, you know, you're gonna have so much more chances of being successful. Someone like Sam's chances of making it through, if they did a velodrome in Ireland, would be tripled, quadrupled. You know, it'd be less of a struggle for the next people coming through. And I think that's something we're really focusing on, to try and really push to get that. But in the meantime, though, there's lots of opportunities out there and really good clubs. Like, I started back in the 80s whenever Roach and Kelly were winning. And I remember my local club, I started when I was 10, and our local club just restarted up again because of the success of Roach and Kelly. And then that got me and my brothers into it. There was four of us, and there was two bicycles, so we used to have to share. My mum had a hard time sharing the bikes out, but we had. And I can see something like that happening again now. People talking about cycling that never did, you know. And so to capitalise on it, really, if we get the velodrome up and running in the next year or two, now that people are interested, it'd be fantastic. But in the meantime, there's so many strong clubs out there. There's 500,000 people in Ireland riding their bikes now with the COVID as well. You know, people's getting out, trying to get healthy. Like, it couldn't be a better time for cycling to take off.
How did you get into it, Martin?
Yeah, that's a long story. But I just, like, there was no, I suppose there was a bit of the Lance Armstrong era then. There was, cycling was booming a bit. It was back in the last boom, if you like, when Lance was winning or whatever. But then there was bikes everywhere. Like, it was through work I got into it, just through people who like cycling. And then I just took it up and thought it was great and went off trying it. And then, like, even back to what Brian was saying there, it was a local club got me. They said, geez, this fella's not bad. And club racing, you go around club races, and then all of a sudden there's national series, and then you go around Ireland, and then there's Europe, you know. So that's kind of how I got to it. But just to even kind of go back on what Brian was saying, it's like, it's even if you want to parallel it with our neighbors over in Britain, like 20 years ago, they didn't have any tracks, or not many, indoor arenas. Now, just because of the weather, it sucks here in Ireland. You need that indoor arena. They didn't have it back then, and they just were able to throw kids at it. And then all of a sudden, you just have Olympians in a couple of cycles, and you're winning Olympic. They were able to win Olympics, and that was all because there was a velodrome built to just throw people at it. And then all of a sudden, you find the talent. We're relying on a lot of talent wanting to cycle to get good at it, which takes a lot longer, I think. From my own personal experience, I wasn't talented at all. I just worked a lot at it and got to a good level. But if you had the velodrome there and you could just throw bodies at it, I know it sounds brutal, but you just throw people at it, and then all of a sudden you'll find some kid has been playing GA or playing rugby or something, and he just happens to be a freak on a bike, and then all of a sudden you send him down that path. And that's what the velodrome, an indoor arena in the off-season, is key for us to test people. When there's no racing going on and you can take anyone in the off-season and test people, that's on a high-performance level, that's where I can see it being really beneficial. You'll just have floods of people coming through.
Eve, winning a medal, a gold at the Paralympics, would have changed your life, obviously, with Katie, George and Levy as well. And to have the opportunity for so many young people to be able to go into a velodrome in the winter, and for have more people to win medals, you can actually design this. It did happen in Britain. I was going through the stats here, Eve. 38 medals at the Summer Olympics between 1912 and 2004, 38 over the last three Summer Olympics, 10 goals in the first Olympics in 1896 until 2004 in Britain, then 22 since then. So we can do that here, maybe to a lesser level, but we can definitely do it if we get the facilities in place. Sure. Eve. Mm.
Oh, of course we can if we have the facilities. That track medal, the Paralympic medal that myself and Katie didn't get, like that just plays in our mind all the time. Even though we have the gold medal from the time trial and the silver medal from the road, the fact that we didn't get a medal in the track actually annoys us, because it's something that I think that we can do. I think I said it to Katie, we were training in, we went to one of the tracks in England in November, gosh, I can't remember where we went, for a weekend with the team. And I said to Katie, and I think she looked at me as if it had horns on my head, and I said, I can't wait for Tokyo, thinking it was in July. And I just knew by my legs, I knew how we felt on the track. And she says, why? And I says, we're going for a world record. And she actually looked at me as if I had horns on my head. And I said, Katie, we have to give it our all. I know we have the power, the strength, the ability. We have the coaching staff behind us. We have the institute. We have everything behind us to do it. And like, from a small nation with no track, that's how we look at ourselves. You know, well, I said it to her, and the two of us are working towards that. But if we had that track here, all the hours that we would get in that track to get to that goal, I know we'd get there. And I hope I'm not coming across as being like big. I know it's there. Like, it's when you feel it as an athlete that you know it's there, but you just can't get to it because you don't have the facility at your doorstep. It's just so annoying. It's like starting a race if you don't have the same equipment as anybody else, because you're on the back foot straight away. So even though our equipment is brilliant, we just don't have the velodrome. So you're getting into the start gate knowing that the people across the track from you, the British girls, the New Zealand girls, have a track. So mentally, as an athlete, you feel that you're on the back foot. So we shouldn't be that way as Irish athletes. Like, we have the power, we have the strength, we have brilliant staff, as I said, to show us what to do. And it really is up to us to go into the start gate and deliver. But it's very hard when we don't have that velodrome here. So at least next year, we have another 12 months to work on that, maybe go a bit more to England and train on the track, which is financially difficult as well, that we have to do that and go to Mallorca and go to England for a weekend. And, you know, there is a big, you know, financial component towards that as well, which is quite tough. And I don't mean to be negative. I'm delighted that we get the opportunity, but as athletes, it's hard if you're in the start gate, kind of not getting the use of the track.
Do you have any questions for Eve McChrystal, Brian Nugent and Martin Irvin on the future of Irish cycling? 53106 is the number for your text messages here at Off the Ball on Twitter. Are you still targeting that world record though, Eve?
Sorry?
You're still targeting that world record?
I'm still, what, say that again?
Targeting the world record.
I think we can do it. I'd be a pie in the sky. Maybe Brian and Martin will go, oh God,
definitely can do it.
You have to aim high. I'm not, and I've said it, we are not going to Tokyo for anything less than a gold medal. And that, I'm not leaving my kids again, going to Mallorca for weeks on end again to come home at nothing. You know, so I wouldn't go if I didn't think we could do it. But I really do think that we can. If all our ducks are in a row and the legs work on the day, I do think that we can do it, yeah.
Welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. It's Manchester United 2, Brighton 1 in the Premier League. We're streaming the panel, which is live now as well. You can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it. Sam Bennett won last week the green jersey at the Tour de France. So we're going to chat about cycling at the moment, the future of the sport that's in the limelight. On the panel with the former Olympian and gold medal winner in the scratch race at the World Championships back in 2013, Martin Irvin, and the Cycling Ireland Performance Director, Brian Nugent, and the Paralympic gold medalists as the pilot to Katie George Dunleavy in Rio, Eve McChrystal. Welcome back, folks. We were speaking to before the break there to Eve about Tokyo and winning another medal there, Brian and Marsh. And Brian, what's your plan around Tokyo? How many we've got some qualified athletes already. How many are we hoping to send? What are our medal prospects like if we get there?
Yeah, and the cycling news just gets better and better. We actually tripled our Olympic qualifications from the last number of games. We usually get between 2 and 3 people to the Olympics. We have this year we qualified 9. On the 12th, just before the COVID started in March, we had the World Championships in Berlin. It was actually our last race together. We qualified a men's Madison team, so we got 3 athletes there that does the Madison and Omnium, and we qualified a women's Madison team. It was just 3 riders again. And that's phenomenal for a team of our size. And we got 3 in the road race, so the likes of the Sams and the Nico Roaches and the Dan Martins, those guys. So we have 9 in total, and like we only had 3 in Rio, so it's massive for us. And we haven't finished our qualification for paracycling yet, but it looks like we're going to have 5 or 6. We're hoping to get 6, and that'll be the same as Rio, but that team's already performing at such a high standard that we're just looking to repeat that success, and the growth there won't be the same. But for the Olympic team, it's massive how that's came together. Like, and that's all that track work is done out in Mallorca, as we were saying earlier, because we don't have the velodrome here. But the nice little system out there, and Martin works hard out there with us, and it's starting to deliver.
Yeah, Martin, you made great sacrifices to get to the top, obviously. You won the Worlds in 2013, that scratch race. You know, you've had hip issues, I've read about. Did you feel you got enough support at the time? You're a world champion. It's not just a velodrome that will solve everything in terms of not only making our new household names, but also supporting them beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, we have world-class support now. That's not the problem. You know, the best brains we can pick weekly, you know, they're all in the Sports Institute out there. There's no worries about that side of things. I think it's more, it's just what Eve was saying back to, for us, for Irish athletes, well, it's our own problem maybe, our Irish track cycling athletes, we have to go away to train. So that's stress around life. You know, your main part of your life's on hold when you're doing that, trying to get to the world level on a track bike, because you have to travel away a lot. That's the only thing I would say, you just put the main part of your life, pause, clear off for a training block or racing block, and then you come back to your life again. So I think that's where we'd have a bit more longevity with athletes. We'd have more athletes, and you could be able to balance work-life, if you want to call it work-life balance, better if you had the velodrome sitting there. So that for me, I was able to just turn my brain off, tunnel vision, go off and do it. And my wife, she obviously let me go and do it, so that's another good thing. But you know, that's not, it wouldn't happen in all cases. So you've lost to athletes because it is such an extreme way of doing it. That's the only thing from going through it and coming past it and looking back at it. That was the only crux there that I found. It was a few, obviously Eve's a special breed. I was a special sort of breed that was able to do it. And, you know, that's not everyone's cup of tea. So that's harping back to the velodrome thing. I think that's where it'll help. You just have a lot more athletes wanting to do it because it's doable.
Eve, have you seen an increase in people cycling during COVID, out and about with clubs? Have you seen the sport grow in popularity?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there was a bike shop that had many bikes. I think even for Christmas, I think the shopping needs to start now. Just the influx of cyclists was brilliant. I can see them when I'm training myself. There's a lot more cyclists on the road. It's great. It's amazing. Like, you know, for people's mental health, just to go out, and you don't have to be the best in the world. You can just get on your bike. And if it means just cycling to the coffee shop, having a coffee and coming home, you know, isn't a good part of your day. It's great to see it, really.
Is it safe as it could be? What could be done to make it more safe on our road cycling?
Oh, look, I think we just all have to be aware of each other. Be aware of your own space on the road. I think, like, we do get a bad rap as cyclists, but not all cyclists will ride their bikes right either. So I've seen a few myself go through red lights, but I also see cars going through red lights. So I just think if we all respect each other's space, I think we would, more infrastructure, I think, would be way better. I am actually nervous, very nervous, riding through Dublin. I don't think I rode through Dublin up until maybe 4 years ago, and I was out with whoever was in front of me, and sure, he was gone. I didn't know where he was. I was breaking, and it's a skill that you have to learn to ride through the city. And if you're not from the city, it's quite daunting when you do go into it. But cars can go past you very fast, so it's quite nerve-wracking as a cyclist when you've nothing around you to protect you.
Brian and Martin, are you seeing a gap as well in terms of the rural and the city divide, and maybe the education that needs to be there for both motorists and cyclists?
Yeah, that's actually, I wanted to nearly jump in either. There's like, we're like cyclists, and we know, like, we learn. I know I kind of cycle like I drive a car, you know, I obey the stops, starts. And there's cyclists, and then there's people who cycle bikes, I find. There's people that just want to get from A to B, and I don't care how to get there. They just plow through everything. So there's definitely, I don't know whose responsibility it is. I don't know, probably opening a can of worms here, but people, there needs to be some sort of education in the basics. Like, a bike, just because you can cut a corner on a bike doesn't mean you have to do it. If you're on the road, the road rules apply. That's the kind of way I think. And I think I'd go into the city and there'd be people, it's a scary prospect. I'm always looking over my shoulder, even cycling out here. It's unfortunately the era we're in, you know, there's too many people dying on bikes, and that's kind of, we need infrastructure, and hopefully this boom can kind of motivate the right people to start putting it in place, because the last thing you want is to lose a family member or something from riding a bike. You know it should be good, safe, it's healthy, there should be no deterrent for doing it. So I think that's definitely something where Ireland needs to catch up. You know, even from my time in Europe, there's Holland, like, the cars are second fiddle to bikes over there. It's amazing the infrastructure they have. So we're far away from that, but I think if we can get towards separate lanes and a bit more of an etiquette around bikes and cars, I think it'll only help the boom, you know.
Yeah, and the infrastructure has been growing, I had cycled in Ireland for years, because once I started coaching, you forget to cycle yourself, because you get too busy running around the world. But in COVID, I actually started back riding the bike myself in Dublin, and I realized there's a lot of stuff you wouldn't see because you weren't doing it. And there's a lot of bike lanes now, a lot of stuff that wasn't there. So from when I was racing 10, 15 years ago. So I felt a little safer than that. As Martin said, it's nothing close to what we have. And when we're away in Holland and Mallorca, where cycling is one of the mainstream sports. But there has been a lot of progress in that, and you can see it. And if we continue along that road now and join up the bike lanes, and that'll be massive for people, you know. There's a lot of work there, but there's more to do.
What's the profile of people cycling, Brian? Is it like teenagers, under 40s, over 40s, male, female? Is there a general fit or profile, or is it all comers, really?
Well, what we're finding out in our programs is we used to have, like, for gender, and we'll start with the gender, we used to have like 80% male, 90% male, but now it's like we're running programs over COVID for our under 18s. They can log in online and listen to the coaches, like their junior coaches, Martin O'Loughlin and Thomas Fallon, and Martin has been on doing some stuff as well. And 60%, 40% male-female ratio, which is something we hadn't seen in a long time. So that there's a lot of women and young girls riding their bikes now. But when I'm out training, just looking recently, there's a lot of people around my age, just, you know, over 40s, out just out on the bike enjoying it. It's not, you don't see as many kids on the road. Probably maybe they're not going too far from home, but. If you had if we had the better infrastructure and the velodrome, and you would have more and more kids, and that's what you want, really. That's really what you want at the end of the day, is getting kids in and making a lifelong sport for them.
Where'd you go, Eve? Like, where'd you start? How'd you take it up at any level, whether it's casual or competitive? How'd you take up cycling? What's the first point? What's the first thing you do?
Well, I just think just to point there, when you're talking about COVID and people getting involved in cycling, we did, I did one of the sessions. Cycling Ireland did a Bike Like Me program for women, which was brilliant. Every Monday night, I think it was 7 weeks, 7 or 9 weeks, we did a Bike Like Me program. So like, I was sitting in my kitchen and I was taking a group of women that came online, and they had their program designed for them by Neil Delahaye. So he gave them a program, free program for 7 weeks. And then every Monday night they had one of us, there was seven Irish riders who took them. And that was a massive success, which is going to continue on, I think, starting again in November, if I'm right. And so all of those women have just kind of continued on their journey, whatever their journey is. And we all have different journeys. So I think to start off is something like that, to get onto the Cycling Ireland website. If you want to, whether you can be a leisure cyclist, a racing cyclist, if you want to do cyclocross, if you want to do mountain biking, just go onto the website and see. Well, obviously you need a bike, but you need to kind of learn how to ride the bike as well. And your local club is always the best place, I think, to go to, because you always have different levels. Like, I know when Dundalk Hullin Cycling Club kind of meet at different times on Saturday and Sunday, and they take different levels of riders. And which is great, because you actually learn how to ride your bike. There's an awful lot more to just hopping on the bike and going, because you need to know the rules of the road. So, but it's kind of like the social media nowadays, you can reach out to anybody and ask. Anybody can message me and go, what do you think? Like, all of the women say that cycle, you know, for a living, I suppose, will always answer your questions. So never be afraid to ask.
Yeah, you're on Twitter there, Eve, aren't you? I was Eve McChrystal on Twitter.
Yes.
And just follow up what Eva's saying there. Like, there's those clubs around every town around the country, and they typically go out at 9:30 on a Sunday morning. There's different levels of groups, and they'll always meet somewhere central. But you'll find them locally. There's strong cycling clubs all around the country for people who and if you don't know where they meet or what they do, you go on the Cycling Ireland webpage and you'll find a club locally, and you ring the club secretary. Like, that's a very basic way of getting in, but it worked. That's how I started, you know.
Is it expensive?
There is a lot of good cycling programs out there at the minute.
Is it expensive?
Yes.
Yes.
Very expensive. Yeah, because you might get the basics, and then you're not going faster than Bob beside you, and you're looking at Bob's bike, and right, then you want those wheels. Instead of kind of working hard for you to get your legs faster, you go, well, if that, you know, I might save myself. Yeah, and get the fastest wheels. And yeah, it's a bottomless pit, is right, Martin. Yeah, a lot of money.
Yeah, you get sucked into it, but it's good.
We don't spend money on alcohol, or, well, I don't. Well, maybe a bottle of wine. But we don't, you know, we're not social, really. We don't go out. I don't go anywhere.
So almost reclusive if you're doing it right.
All I do is ride my bike. I don't do anything else.
So, Martin, when you were winning the Worlds, how much was the bike, you know, was it worth thousands, the bike, what you won the Worlds on?
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough, I suppose we were going a while, so there was Cycling Ireland have a good stock of like world-class equipment there. So I forget what the frame it probably is the minimum a couple of thousands for the bike frame bit, but then you've got wheels that cost like 4,000-6,000 euros, and then you've got handlebars that cost hundreds of euros, and then you've got helmets that cost hundreds of euros, and then shoes that cost hundreds of euros, and then it's a lot of hundreds of euros when you add all that up.
I'm trying to think, like, my world's bike would have maybe been 6,000 or 7,000 maybe. Well, you know, to have everything. Thankfully, I didn't pay for it all, but that's kind of like ballpark, you know. Yeah.
So it's almost, but if you're a kid looking to get in at entry level, you can get in pretty cheap. You know, you can pick up a bike less than 500 euros if you just want to get started and enjoy it.
I would say, brands bang on there. There's too much emphasis put on, you need all the best. It's two wheels and a frame. A bike, generally, like, if you want to move on it, like, a few hundred euros will get you a bike that'll do the job. You know, you don't have to be going mad. But like Eve was saying, once you get into the club level or you're racing, and then you just like, geez, that looks good, that's faster, this is faster, and then it's never ending, you know. So it is a slippery slope. You got to be careful when you get on there.
And then when you have a daughter who has a bike that I got her, I think, a year ago, which I suppose, was under 500 euro, and she's got taller, and she's asking for a new bike. And then her, when I say, no, you don't need it, that'll do you for another year, she's like, well, ma'am, you have four bikes. Like, what do you say when she's looking for a new one? So, quite expensive.
Just margin on the stigma of doping. Obviously, Lance Armstrong, you mentioned earlier on, that affair was very damaging for the reputation of cycling. Has there been a reluctance from parents maybe to get kids involved in the sport because of that? You know, or are those fears that need to be allayed? The sport still need to rid itself of those kind of question marks?
I don't think on an Irish level that even crosses people's minds. It's not something that's something for the big egos to get. I mean, I always thought Irish people are too scared to go down that road. I was shit scared of doing it when I was in career. I was so straight. It was like, it was just the stigma of what would your mommy think or what would your friends think? You know, I think this goes over all Irish athletes. I think that's a thing that's, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know. Personally, that's what I think. But I think that's never something. It almost annoys me that cycling's branded as this horrible, dirty sport, because it's not. It's just, we're a sport that actively looks for it a lot better than other sports. There's so many sports out there that are doing all sorts of crap. They just turn a blind eye to it. So in a way, I'm glad cycling tests so much, because it is a lot cleaner, I think, at the world level. There's definitely, like, I could be wrong, I don't know numbers, it's my personal opinion, but there's sports that just don't care what happens as long as it looks good. Cycling's the opposite. They actually look for it and try to keep it clean. So calling it the dirtiest sport, I think, gives it a bad slant, to be honest. I don't think it is the dirtiest sport. I just think they care about cleaning it up a lot more than others.
Brian, what's your take on that?
Yeah, what I found after the Lance Armstrong thing, it turned out to be, like, good for the sport afterwards, because, and the role that I do, and my counterparts around the world, all the performance leaders in Australia and New Zealand, all those countries started to put education programs in for the people in their squads, for their staff, picking good staff that were like-minded, working with institutes of sports. And there's a brand new group of young kids coming through. As you've seen the Tour de France this week, brand new group of young kids coming through that are talented, educated, and don't know that culture, and have been well educated. And I think that's the big thing. Education was the key, and the anti-doping in Ireland is fantastic for that in Sport Ireland, and they've been educating the kids from since they're 14, 15, 16, they come out to Mallorca on our summer camps, go to Belgium, test them, educate them about it. And that's happening all around the world. And you see in the Tour de France, we're having the youngest winners, the youngest stage winners ever. And they're all 20 or below. And you can see that's just, the structure's getting better. You find better talent and they're educating it well. And that whole thing, that older generation's just disappearing now, and that's fantastic. Even in coaching, the coaches are younger, everybody's from a new generation, and I think it's the Lance Armstrong thing has left a really positive effect on our sport, and it's great for me. I take a lot of satisfaction in the fact that our programs are well educated, and I sleep well at night knowing that our kids aren't being exposed to that. It's great for us.
Brian, is it a catch-22 in a way that if you test more, you're going to catch more dopers? If you don't test as much, you know, you present a clean image.
Yeah, well, you are possibly correct, but look, we're the highest tested sport in Ireland by double, beyond a shadow of a doubt. We get the figures every year, and it's actually better than knowing that. As you say, as Martin had said earlier, yes, for the image of worldwide, because we test so much, you would find more people where in other sports you possibly wouldn't find the outliers. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it keeps everybody on their toes. I know the guys in my program, like, they're, as Martin said, they're frightened to do it, absolutely frightened, because it's not accepted, and we don't tolerate that type of thing in the sport anymore. Yes, so it gives the sport a bit of a bad image in the past, but now it's got a really positive image among the sporting bodies, because if someone's caught, the team's just they get fired instantly now, and they don't get a second chance. And I think for doping, that has to be that way.
I've got a text in here on 53106. Last year, we had 10 kids training each weekend, now nearly 50 boys and girls, all ages. It is growing at a fantastic rate, but more infrastructure needed. Velodrome, but also off-road tracks like Corka Park. That is from the Orwell Wheelers. And that's it, isn't it? It's not only just about the cycling, it's probably about relationships you build, Eve, with all these people that you meet at your club that you wouldn't have known before, and probably friendships that come out of that, you know?
Yeah, the friends that you make, is like, I've made so many friends through cycling. I think just when you mentioned there with Orwell Wheelers commenting, like, they're a great club. I think we've opened a track here in Dundalk, an outdoor track, cyclocross track, and they've made use of that track a few times, and the amount of kids that take through, adults that come through their club, you know, it's amazing. But you need the facilities there for the kids to go to. You know, cyclocross now will start, and the amount of children that we'll see coming up now. I think today there was a coaching out at our place just for kids. I don't know how many kids are there, but I can guarantee you it was probably about 20 to 30 children that were there today training. And like, all those kids grow up then, and it's a healthy habit to make friends. It takes them off the street. It's just I don't know. It's great for kids, I think, to have a passion. I always said I wouldn't care if my kids took up hula hoop, and once they have a passion in something, that's kind of, you know, makes them move and, you know, think outside the box, really. And it's good.
Eve, so, just one thing, right? I don't have kids, right?
Yeah.
But if you were sending your kid out on the, I mean, I'm guessing if you had a load more tracks, you'd be way happier sending them to closed road tracks and sending them off on the road. Because, I mean, I'm thinking if I had kids, sending them off up the road would be the last thing I'd do. And I think that's where maybe it hinders the sport a bit at that level.
Yeah, it is. I think, like, my daughter would be able to cycle to school, but I don't let her go from here A to B. I kind of leave her halfway, and then she can cycle where I know there's a footpath the whole way up. But, like, that's why I think we opened that track. It's like there's six fields where kids can just, their parents can just drop them off, and they can just cycle around six fields. You know where they are. If they fall on grass, the skills that they learn, that's where I fall down as an older athlete. I didn't learn those skills when I was a junior, and I still struggle to this day, you know, not having those skills. And to learn that from a younger age, and even if you come away from cycling, which an awful lot of people do, especially girls, come away for a period of time, I think in their mid-teens. But when they come back, those skills are there. Then you learn that from outdoor tracks. You know, for how to go around a corner, how to bunny hop, how to fall, you know, properly. You have to learn how to fall properly. So, outdoor tracks, I think, are the way to go until we have the infrastructure in place to allow our children out on the street.
Yeah, just a text in here in 53106. Discuss the correct fitting of helmets. It's crazy to see people with helmets on the back of their head. So, so dangerous.
Yeah, I'm no expert by any means, but, like, if your forehead's hanging in your helmet, it's not going to protect much, is it? But that's my theory. Like, I don't know how it is. I wouldn't even begin to tell people how to wear one. But this, if you're going to hit the ground head first, it's going to be this part of your head. And your helmet should be from above your eyes back, you know. It should not be sitting on the back of your head. But, like, that's just the technique, man. Yeah, it needs to fit your head. It needs to not move and sit there from there back. But you need another sort of expert in to give you the right answer on that one. But, yeah, that's a pet hate of mine.
Yeah.
So I just want to know one thing, really, just before we finish up here. Martin Irvin, Eve McChrystal, and Brian Nugent. When are we going to get a yellow jersey behind us in the OTB studio here? Anybody going to be able to pick one up for us?
we're working on that. We're working hard.
Yeah. You'd be rich, man, if you predict that timeline.
Yeah, yeah. I almost tried to make one, but I won't. We'll make a prediction of that.
So, Brian, you're in Italy. What's the plan now for the next few days and months?
Well, we're training on the course this morning, and we have a meeting now at 7 o'clock for the plan for tomorrow. It's a tough, tough course. It's one of the hardest courses I've seen in a number of years, which is quite fitting coming off the tour, and everybody's in good form. So, we have Nicholas Roach here as our leader, and so well, Ryan and Ben will support him as best they can, but it's going to be tough in the final 50k tomorrow. So a lot of wind here. It's predicted to be wet. So a big job ahead of us, but we're ready for it and we're looking forward to it.
Well, Brian Nugent, Martin Irvine, Eve McChrystal, thanks so much for sharing your time about iRecycling, where it is right now after Sam Bennett's win. What we need, that velodrome, obviously soon, and hopefully the government and the state, despite the difficulties we have, will be able to fund that in the next few years. And they'll be able to go back from Mallorca and get up training here, and hopefully Tokyo will happen and we'll have success at it. So I wish to thank you all for sharing your opinions and your thoughts and your time today, and the best of luck for the rest of 2020.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Back after this.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.